This is Brian Copeland talking. Welcome to another edition of Copeland's Corner. A little bit later on in the podcast, we'll be joined by our distinguished panel of comics, and we'll talk about some of the news of the week. I want to start with this. I had coffee with a buddy of mine a couple of days ago, and he was telling me how his wife had inherited a house. And I'm not going to say where, but I live in the East Bay in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it is a community that is close to mine. And she had inherited a home from her parents. They already own their own home, but my friend and his wife own them in the bank. You know, they're paying the mortgage on it, but they own their own house. And his wife has inherited a home that is 100% free and clear. And the house was purchased by her father in 1964. And right now the house, he paid something like $25,000 for it in 1964. And now looking at the median home price in that area, that particular area that I'm talking about, the house is worth somewhere between $800,000 and $1 million. So basically she just inherited $800,000 to $1 million. Because her father was able to buy this house in 1964 for $25,000. Now, the thing that is the very pertinent part that I am leaving out of, have left out of this conversation so far, is that the place where this home exists back in 1964 had it written in the bylaws of the homeowners association that you couldn't live there unless you were white. You had to be white to live there. Realtors would not show you a home in that particular place unless you were white. You could not get a bank to lend you money for a mortgage, including major banks. And I'm talking like Bank of America, Wells Fargo, major banks in 1964, if you were a person of color and you tried to buy in that particular community. So why do I bring this up? We have a major wealth gap in this country right now between the net worth of African Americans. Well, there's always been a major gap, but it seems like it gets worse and worse every year between African Americans and between white people in this country. And how is most wealth in this country passed down? It's passed down through real estate. Yeah, most of the kids, I'm African American. I went to primarily white private schools, and I haven't inherited squat because none of my forefathers owned squat because they were not in positions to be able to buy places for 25 grand that are now worth $1 million. However, the kids I grew up with now, their parents are now, they're at the age where the parents are passing on, and now they're instant millionaires, quite frankly, by virtue of the fact that they were born white. So California approved a bill back in 2020 that called for the creation of a reparations task force to determine whether or not the state of California owed reparations to African Americans in the state of California. California for slavery. And California was a free state. California was always a free state. However, it respected the rights of other states that were not free states. So in other words, if you came from Mississippi to California and you were a slaveholder and you brought your slaves with you from Mississippi to California, they were still your slaves. Even though California was a free state, they still respected the sovereignty of Mississippi that and the laws of Mississippi that allowed the slaveholder to maintain ownership of those slaves. So that's one of the main reasons that they decided to look at this. So the report is due from this commission's been working for the last 3 years on this. And the report is due on July 1st. And right now, there are a couple of numbers that have been reported that are floating around right now. And one is they're saying that every African-American who lives in the state of California is due $1.2 million in reparations. And they name a number of reasons Why? 36.8% of blacks own their own homes versus 63.2%. And that's due to zoning and financial practices and practices such as those that I just mentioned that allowed my friend's wife to inherit a home free and clear that is worth $1 million, you know, because her father was able to buy in a community that my father or my grandfather or my mother or my grandmother was legally bound from purchasing property in. You know, even if she walked there was 25 grand and she walked in with a cashier's check for 25 grand, they still wouldn't take it. So that was an opportunity that she was completely and totally locked out of. And they look at other things too, like the fact that there's the use of drugs among blacks and whites is roughly the same. However, blacks are incarcerated at three times greater rates for the same crime. They looked at life expectancy. If you are black in the state of California, you can expect to live 7.6 years fewer than if you are white. And they came up with this $1.2 million figure. They're looking at reparations in San Francisco as well. And the figure that came up in San Francisco was something like $5 million. Now, neither one of these is going to happen. I'll say that right off the bat. It ain't going to happen. You get 2/3 of Americans who are opposed to reparations of any kind, and 90% of Republicans who are opposed to reparations of any kind. It's not going to happen. They're not going to start writing checks for $1.2 million to black people. And don't get me wrong, I'll cash the check if it comes, but it's not going to happen. Then there becomes the question of who do you pay? Who gets paid? And I believe that one of the proposals with the California reparations report that is forthcoming is that if you can prove direct lineage to slavery, then you can collect. Or if you can prove that you lived in the state of California for a number of years, it had to be something like at least 20 or 25 years or something, then you could collect. But they're all different kinds of formulas and all different kinds of proposals. And quite frankly, none of them are going to see the light of day. It's a nice academic discussion, but I don't see a practical way how this can be done until I had this conversation with my friend the other day. Now, if you're talking about going back to being descendants of slaves, it's too difficult to prove, quite frankly. For most black people in this country, even though we know the majority of us are descended from slaves, it's too difficult to prove. We can't go to Ancestry.com and actually be able to go back and prove that, because the census records, for example, which is a major source of the information for genealogy that Ancestry uses, the census records only go back so far, and they go back to the emancipation. And prior to the emancipation, if you were a slave, you were simply listed, you know, they would list the name of the household, you know, John Smith, age 36, Jane Smith, age 34. They'd list like they do now. But if you were a slave, they would just be black male, 16, white female, 14. So there's no real way of proving it. And then you look at, okay, what about black people who came here who were not descended from slaves, but still had to deal with the same segregation and the same discrimination and the same disadvantages that those who were descended from slaves had to live with? So who gets paid and how do you figure this out? So having this conversation with my friend, I think I figured it out. Here's if they're going to do this, here's how this should be done. At least in the state of California, here's how this should be done. After the Second World War, that's when the GI Bill and all of these benefits for those coming home for World War II were put into place by the federal government. That's when the baby boom started. That's when the suburbs were created. And as part of the creation of all of these new homes, that's also when redlining was set up, and was set up by the federal government, where they would not lend they would not provide mortgages or lend or insure mortgages to certain neighborhoods. And those certain neighborhoods were neighborhoods where there were people who were non-white. In those years, you could, until 1948, you could put into the deed of a house a race covenant that said that nobody other than a white person was allowed to buy that house. After that, they came up with a scheme of homeowners associations that basically did the same thing. So you have an entire generation of people. My great-grandfather and my grandfather were not able to take advantage of the $25,000 house that's worth $1 million right now. However, the way that you deal with this is, I would say, don't go back to slavery in the state of California. Go back to world. Go back to 1945. Go back to 1946. Go back to the year after the Second World War ended, when the GI Bill and all the stuff and the suburbs being created and all of these federal loan programs and whatnot are being created, and when redlining is being designed, because that's really where the inequity and wealth began, was there. You know, as I said, most wealth is handed down by real estate. Your parents owned a house. They bought it cheap. It's worth a fortune by the time they die. You get it. So now you've got a 6 or 7 figure windfall that you'll use to either buy a second home or to pay off the home that you're already living in. And then you'll get that to your kids and so on and so forth. And Black people, most Black people don't have that because we were not able to get down on the ground floor. So rather than going back to slavery, go back to like 1946. And if you can prove that your forefathers, your father, your grandfather, your great-grandfather, your great-grandmother, whoever, was denied housing, was denied the opportunity to buy in a particular neighborhood, a neighborhood that has grown exponentially in value since that time, then there should be some kind of a government remedy. And I'm not going to talk about just, you know, writing checks and mailing people out checks. What I would say is that if you can prove, for example, that this community I'm talking about, again, with the $25,000 house is worth six figures, if you can prove, all you got to do is to show that you tried to buy a house there. I mean, it was in writing. In fact, it was in writing in this association bylaws. It was in writing until something like 20 or 25 years ago. Even though it was unenforceable, somebody was going through the bylaws and found this antiquated language there and was just shocked that the language was still there. And it took some major legal and procedural machinations in order to remove that language. So if you can prove that you tried to buy in that community and you were a person of color and you were denied the opportunity to buy in that community because of the fact that they did not accept people of color, or if you can prove that you were not given a mortgage, even though you qualified for one of these communities from one of the major banks. And I mentioned a Wells Fargo and Bank of America because there were the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights conducted hearings here in the East Bay in the late 1960s, who wanted to find out why it was that if you were Black, you could get a mortgage in Oakland. But the second you stepped across the lines into neighboring San Leandro, which was 99.99% white, suddenly there's nothing available. There's no room at the end for a mortgage. If you can prove that, then what you should get in terms of reparations is you should get a down payment. That's what you should get. You should get a down payment for a house. The down payment is covered by the government in the form of reparations. That's what you get for the fact that you missed out on all that wealth, on generations, a couple of generations of wealth because of redlining. And the redlining was done at the behest of and with the collusion of the state government and the United States government. That is how you are made whole. So that's the solution. That's how I would do it. I wouldn't go back to slavery. Go back to the late 40s. Go back from the late 40s until I'd say about the early to mid 70s is when this completely went away. It was illegal before that. Once the Fair Housing Act went into became federal law in like 1968, it was illegal then, but it still went on. It still went on until at least 1974, 5, 6. So if you can go from say 1946 to maybe 1976 during that 30-year period, and you can prove that you tried to buy in a particular community that was an all-white community and you qualified and you were not allowed to purchase in that community because of the color of your skin, then I think that you should be able to buy a house and that the government, in the form of reparations, should pay for your down payment. And I think that that's fair. And I think that's the easiest way to do it, the simplest way to do it, and the fairest way to do it. So what do you think? This is the part of the podcast that we call Headliners on the Headlines. Joining me this week, three of my regulars, three of our favorites here on the podcast. Ron Vi is joining us. Where are you calling from? Are you in Nevada right now?
I am. I was in California over the weekend performing at Laughs Unlimited, but here I am in Nevada, Las Vegas.
Well, welcome.
Thanks.
And Damon Ferguson is with us. Good to have you, Damon, as always.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And Lauren Mayer, who lives here on this podcast, quite frankly.
Basically,
I wouldn't have a podcast without you as my cornerstone.
Thank you. I'm your Ed McMahon. I think the other two comics are too young to get that.
No, I got it.
I know Ed. He was on the Tonight Show next to Johnny, and then published for Clearinghouse.
I was going to say, he stood next to Dick Clark, giving out giant checks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's start with this. This just breaking as we record this on Wednesday. You know where I'm going.
Yeah.
At the age of 83, Tina Turner has passed away.
Man,
after a long illness in Zurich. No details that I've seen so far. All of the news outlets, AP and everybody, they've all got that she's died, that she's 83. But they're calling her something that I have not heard. Have you guys heard this before? They're calling her the queen of rock and roll. I don't disagree with that. But
I've heard that.
I've never heard of that before.
I've heard that. Yeah.
I've heard Queen of Soul, but that was Aretha Franklin.
That was Aretha, yeah. Yeah,
I never heard Queen of Rock and Roll, but I also do agree. And you know, it's funny. She's one of those people that have been on my list, and she hasn't really been touring in a quite a long time, right? She moved to Switzerland, and she was quite happy. But she was always one of those people that I said that I'm going to regret never being able to see them.
You know, somebody put out a list. I want to say it was the AP over the course of the last couple of weeks of musical icons who are still alive in their 80s and in their 90s, and most of them are still performing. And I was going down that list and thinking, oh, I better hurry up.
Yeah. Mm.
I'd like to see McCartney, you know, and in fact, when McCartney was coming through town, when McCartney was touring, I wanted to see him, but it was, you know, if you were able to get the ticket without paying the VIG ticket now, it was $1,000. Yeah. You know,
I did see him when he was in town because my husband is a diehard McCartney fan. And since he's younger, I always joke I had to tell him that McCartney was in a band before Wings. but we went and he did get tickets at the list price. And we were way up in the nosebleed seats, but we walked around. I thought we brought the age down. It was the first time I'd felt young at a concert.
How was he live?
He was great. He's lowered a few keys, which is kind of understandable, but he was a real showman, and it was a great concert, and they did a great job on the sound, which at a ballpark, this was at whatever they call that park now. I don't even remember what it's called anymore, but the downtown park in San Francisco. It used to be 3Com and something else. Anyway, I was not expecting the sound to be as good, and apparently he's a real stickler for that. So it was great.
You always want to see these like icons, whether it be in music, whether it be in comedy. I made it a point to see Don Rickles when I knew there wasn't much time left, and I saw him a year to the date that he died. But there's a problem with music is that last year I went on this, you know, sort of fix of trying to see people that I may never see again. And one group I saw was Hall & Oates last year, and I wish I didn't.
You know what? But, here's the thing with them, and I'm going to give you a pass on that. Because Hall & Oates was one of my high school bands. You know, I graduated from high school in the early 80s, and I saw Hall & Oates 20 years ago. And I was, and to this day, it remains one of the most disappointing concerts I've ever been to.
I knew that, Brian, before I spent $100. It was
funny. There were some artists that were just better recorded than they were live.
They were like studio musicians, singers, really. They weren't performers. I remember them. Yeah.
But that was the rap that Pat Benatar used to get. And although I hear now she's really great live, but I remember when Pat Benatar did her first tour, and that was the rap from people who, you know, when that first album Crimes of Passion came out, I think that
and, you know, not as old as Hall & Oates, but still been around. I think she's in her 60s. The following night, I saw Belinda Carlisle, and she was amazing.
Now, see, that's the thing. When I'm looking at this list of people who are in their 80s and then their 90s and stuff, we're still working. And I worry about, okay, now, am I going to go? And am I going to be disappointed? Do I want to go and have that impression of them, or do I not? Or do I just, you know, well, they don't have to be that old. As I said, I will go on occasion. You know, my high school bands all play the county fair now. I mean, that's probably, I'm not kidding. My high school bands were like all at the county fair and stuff. And a lot of them are good. And then there's some of them, it's like, ooh, like we went and saw, I went and saw REO Speedwagon was on a bill with Styx.
Oh, wow.
It was REO Speedwagon, Styx, and I'm trying to think who it was the third band, Journey. It was REO Speedwagon, Styx, and Journey. And the only one with the original lead singer was REO Speedwagon, and you know he's doing Keep on Loving You, and what was interesting with that concert was that they had a lot of newer stuff, and the newer stuff was better than the older stuff because they can't hit the notes from the older stuff.
Right, huge Fleetwood Mac fan here, and right before the pandemic, I traveled and saw them three times in 2019, and they were a great example of the people who can't adapt, right? And all of them, except Lindsay, of course, was there. And I sat second row right in front of Christine McVie, and I can still remember everything to this day now that she's passed. It was just such a it was such a beautiful experience. And it's really great when that happens. But, you know, I also want to see Steely Dan, and I'm not so sure how that's going to turn out.
And it depends on if they adapt. I saw Barbara Streisand right before the pandemic. I had actually done some writing for her manager, so I got comp tickets. And she doesn't have the same voice, but she does way more funny stories. And so she's kind of adjusted. And it was a great concert. I didn't expect to enjoy it as much as I did, even though the voice wasn't the same. So I think you're right. It depends on whether people adjust.
I saw Sinatra about a year before he died, when Frank Jr. was conducting the Nelson Riddle Orchestra. And even though he could still hit the notes, his mind was going, and you could tell he was forgetting lyrics.
Wow.
So he was doobie doobie doing and la 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 his way through a lot of it.
You know, it's so funny, when I saw Don Rickles perform, he actually had the opposite. He did a lot of music and not as much comedy. And the music, he was spot on. He sounded good. You know, because he's come from that time where they were just full on entertainers, right? They did everything. Right. And the music part was amazing. The comedy part, his mind was still kind of there, but he had two guys holding him up on either side while he actually physically stood up to do the comedy. And I think that took a lot away from it. And one guy was just there with the tissue to help him blow his nose every few minutes. So that part, I know, that part was like...
You can never unsee that.
Wow, no,
I know!
That's...
It was very sad, but in
the 10 years before, you know, everything all came out, every time Cosby would come to the Bay Area, I would open for Cosby two or three times a year. And what he would do, because he couldn't stand it, and he was blind, you know, he really was legally blind because of the glaucoma. He would walk out and just sit in a nice, comfy, easy chair. And he had a nightstand next to the easy chair with a glass of water on it and a box of Kleenex and a waste basket, so he could drink water and blow his nose and throw the snot paper in the waste basket. And there was a big screen behind him, so if you were in the cheap seats, you could see him. And it was fine. and he killed. I never saw a show where he didn't kill. So it's unfortunate that they did. I don't know why they would make that choice to have somebody come out and hold him up like that.
I guess he's the Diane Feinstein of
comedy. On Diane Feinstein, I was just reading before we started recording. I believe it was Rolling Stone has a piece on how they are trying really, really hard to keep her from being photographed. They are sneaking her. She's in a wheelchair. She had, they're calling it the most famous case of shingles in America. She had encephalitis, apparently, which makes the brain swell. So they're like sneaking her in and out of back doors when they can. And when they can't, they're like forming a human wall around her as she, moves through the halls to get to her transportation. So it's like, again, I am a tremendous admirer of hers. I was there when she got, I was there at the victory party the night she first got elected, when she and Barbara Boxer both got elected together. And so, I have admired her ever since, ever since the Mayor Moscone, and Harvey Milk murders. And when she took charge of the city, I have the utmost respect for her. And I just think that there was an article in Newsweek about how she's destroying her legacy.
Well, that's just it.
By hanging on. So do you agree with that? Do you think she's hurting her legacy? Or I think she needs to pass the baton. She's put in her time, pass the baton.
Well, she'll be remembered for blocking progress, for not letting judges get through. And instead of being remembered for all the good things, like you said, Ron is only going to remember Don Rickles for having to have somebody else blow his nose for him. And you just don't want that to be Diane's legacy.
I read an article, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, and apparently in an interview, she said, "What? I've been here. I've been voting." Like, clearly confused.
Yeah.
That's,
yikes. And they say that encephalitis, one of the side effects of it is memory problems. It's memory problems you can have as a result of the brain swelling. So it's just, and I'll tell you, I hosted an event. I emceed an event about 2 years ago where she was the keynote. 2 years, maybe. Now I had to see, I'm thrown off because of the shutdown. Yeah. I keep thinking stuff's a year ago, and no, actually that was 5 years ago because of the shutdown. It's like I mean, suspended animation. This must have been 4 or 5 years ago, and she, she stood and she spoke. It was the keynote at this fundraising luncheon, and was just sharp as a tack. Was just absolutely sharp as a tack. So, but that does not appear to be this Diane Feinstein, and it's just it's time.
Well, heck, I had COVID, and for a good several weeks afterwards, I felt foggy, and I can't even compare it to, I had it early on. I can't compare it to, encephalitis and shingles, which sound way, way worse. And I'm not as old as she is, but I would have withdrawn from the Senate after my COVID.
Well, here's my question. I mean, isn't there somebody around her saying that? There are Democrats who won't say it out loud. Then you have the AOCs who are saying it out loud. But I mean, there's nobody in her staff. I mean, she's got a husband, she's got children, she's got family members, she's got nieces and nephews. There's nobody in the family going, Auntie Diane.
Yeah, well, it's hard enough to take the car keys away from your elderly relatives, and this is a little bit bigger Senate seat. Sorry, we got to take grandma's Senate seat away.
But I mean, didn't her husband die a year ago?
That's right, he did.
Yeah, and so maybe that's part of it, though, because I saw growing up in New Jersey, my grandma had all of her older neighbors, and a lot of them were couples, and I saw it multiple times as a child. When one went, it was only months before the other one went. So maybe there's just this this thing that she just doesn't want to go, and she has to keep working. I mean, my mom is in her early 70s. My mom refuses to retire. She's going to keep working. So I don't know. Maybe there's part of that, or maybe she just truly doesn't understand what's happening at this point. Either way, it's very sad, and I admire her as well, and I've studied up on her, and of course I wasn't I think I was barely alive when Mayor
Moscone, rub it in, Ron, rub it in.
But you know, I've read all about it. I've seen the video, and she's definitely someone to be admired. But it is time, as you said, to pass the baton. And we're in California, so we're not like we're in danger of having some crazy Republican come in here and like take over. Like it'll be fine.
We've talked about it on here before. She could all but name her successor. I mean, she could name her successor.
Okay,
she
make that a condition. But
can she? I mean, I'm not saying that to be funny or to be cruel. I'm just asking.
Is she able? I don't know.
I'm just asking the question.
Well, team could. They could, because they would know. The people who've worked with her advisors, her chief of staff, would know who she likes and could make that a condition. I think it's just, it's like when you're that well established, like we used to call it Mel Brooks disease. After you've been super, super successful, nobody has the guts to tell you, you know, that's not really funny. Or no, Diane, you need to leave. Maybe nobody has the guts to tell her.
It's got to be somebody she trusts.
There must be somebody. There's got to be somebody. And for all we know, maybe she is being told that and saying, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. You know, like guys going to the doctor. I'm fine.
Look at how old was Strom Thurmond. I mean, he stayed in the Senate till what? He was 120 or something.
He was over 100.
Yeah.
He was over 100 and didn't change his views. One inch did he move his views over that 100 years.
Still a segregationist.
Before we run out of time, I do want to talk just briefly about the debt ceiling because we are getting closer and closer and closer to default and it is not looking good. According to the Treasury Secretary, we run out of money on the 1st of June, and that's the point at which we will not be able to pay our bills. And just so people realize a lot of people don't understand what the consequences of this debt ceiling thing is because we've been through it so many times. Every time there's a Republican House and a Democratic president, they pull this crap. You know, with Trump, they did it 3 times with no problem.
Right. Yeah. And Democrats didn't ask for any conditions those 3 times either.
None. And because you're not, this is money that's already spent. This is paying your credit card bill for stuff that you've already charged. And, you know, and again, they're so concerned about the debt. Well, are you aware that 25% of our national debt from the beginning of the founding of this country until today, 25% of our national debt was accumulated under Donald Trump's administration.
Right, because of his tax cuts.
Because of the tax cuts. So, but the ramifications of this are we're talking about literally millions of people losing jobs. We're talking about the markets plunging. We're talking about the worldwide economy tanking. We're talking about a major recession. Just to bring it down to even a more personal level, Social Security checks are not going to go out. Veterans benefits are not going to go out. And where McCarthy stands, as of what I read in the last hour, is that the Republican House, without a single Democratic vote in April, passed a bill with what it is they want for the debt ceiling to be raised. And that's it. That's the negotiating point. Yeah. They have to and it's dead on arrival in the Senate. Democrats aren't going for this.
No,
but unless they get 100%, unless that bill is enacted into law, they will not raise the debt ceiling. So what they're doing here is they're holding the economy, not just of the United States, but the economy of the world hostage. And the Republican patron saint, Ronald Reagan, had a very strong view on that. And that is that you do not negotiate with hostage takers. You don't negotiate with terrorists. And that's what they're being. They're being economic terrorists.
Well,
it's a mistake. I think that Biden should stick to his guns and shouldn't be trying to cut a deal with them. This should not be used as a bargaining chip, because if you give in now, this is just encouraging them to do it again and again and again.
So, it shouldn't exist in the first place. It's procedurally redundant because the House and the Senate have to pass the budget anyway. And this is paying for money that's already spent. So it's a redundant procedure. It just gives Congress another shot to screw things up, basically.
This all came about because of McCarthy's speaker race. Apparently, by the 13th or 14th vote, he had to agree to get the votes that he would completely put his foot down on the debt ceiling and not give an inch. So that he's like trying to you know, he's afraid if he gives in and allows any concessions at all, he'll lose a speakership. And that's way more important to him than the world economy.
Well,
my mother's Social Security.
The way out of this, and what the only way that I see out of this, quite frankly, unless they blink, and they're not going to blink, and the reason they're not going to blink is because you've got insurrectionists who are running that party who really want to just burn everything down.
Right.
And that's not hyperbole. The Matt Gaetzes, the Marjorie Taylor Greens, they really, the followers of Steve Bannon, they want to burn everything down, and they don't have a problem with it at all. So here's what our only chance is. And I say our, I mean America's, I mean the global economy's only chance with this is you've got a handful of Republican congressmen who were elected in districts that Biden won by a lot. So these are swing districts, and they're up for re-election next year. And what's going on right now, in order to shore them up, you've got the RNC running ads in their districts that are blaming the Democrats for this. And they're complete lies. They're absolutely not true, but they're running ads and they're trying to do this, and so that it looks like it's the fault of the Democrats if this crashes and burns. But
I've seen some of those ads. They're terrible. Was Willie Horton not available?
Apparently not. So what they've got to do is they've got to get a handful of those Republican votes from those who are elected in Biden districts. That's what they've got to get.
Here's what he
needs to be willing to threaten the 14th Amendment, because he could just say, well,
it's the 11th, I believe, isn't it?
14th.
Is it
almost positive 14th? Only because that's one of the things I'm thinking about for this week's song, like doing a Schoolhouse Rock song about the 14th Amendment, because it basically says the government can't default on its bills. Right. And so,
but there's a question as to whether or not the courts are going to uphold that.
Right.
That's the issue. Damon, you were saying?
Here's what I think is going to happen is I think they're going to kick the football down the road. I think they're going to pass a 6-month extension last minute. That's what I think is going to happen. I think that they're going to kick the football down the road, and we're going to go through this all again. And it'll probably continue to get kicked down the road. So it stays an issue, and it stays an issue that will be with us until the next presidential election.
No, that's possible.
There's also the possibility I saw somewhere that they could theoretically mint a $2 trillion coin. There's a hashtag mint the coin.
But again, there's another question as whether or not the courts will uphold that. But
it will be two
platinum coins that are worth $1 trillion each, right? And everything is backed up against that, but it may not be constitutional.
Well, the other problem with that is, you know, that doesn't exactly back up the full faith and credit of the American dollar, and the American dollar is still going to slide in that scenario, because everybody knows that, well, it's not based on anything anyway, but everybody knows that we could default next time if we do that. So it's not a solution that I see working. What I wonder is what the actual political consequences, if any, are going to be if there's a default. Like, what are the consequences to the Republicans? What are the consequences to Biden if that happens?
Well, here's what we're looking at, and you draw your own conclusions from this. Based on the most recent polling, 52% of Americans would blame a default on the Republicans. 48% would blame it on Democrats. 48% would blame it on Democrats.
That's ludicrous that it's that close.
Yeah, it is ludicrous. And Biden has said that if it that one of the reasons they may be willing to let it crash and burn is because he goes, I'm the president. And it doesn't matter, you know, I get the blame for it. Because I'm the president, I'm the guy in charge. So if it crashes and burns, no matter whose fault it is, I'm the one sitting in the Oval Office. So I'm the one who's going to get the blame. So they may do it thinking it's going to help them in 2024. If they plunge us into a recession and we're talking about literally millions of people losing their jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, and the cuts they want are just draconian cuts.
And,
you know, and they're cuts that are going to hurt primarily poor people.
Yeah,
right.
They're going to entirely almost hurt poor people. And, you know, one of the big problems I have with the work for benefits program is all that does is punish the children of poor people. That's really all it does. If you're, you know, if you miss the lottery and you got crappy parents and they're already not taking good care of you and they're on assistance and then, you know, there's a work requirement and they lose those benefits. All that does is punish the kids.
Well, and it doesn't even save money because it costs more money to administer the work requirement. Most working poor are working anyway, and the paperwork is so onerous for those work requirements, you know, and causes red tape. So sometimes people get kicked off even though they're working because they didn't dot their I's correctly or cross their T's.
Or maybe we'll see in a week where we are. Yeah, yeah, we'll see. We should have a better idea this time next week.
Well, but Americans actually, love a cliffhanger.
Is kicking the can down the road.
I think that's what's going to happen. I think that's the most likely outcome.
Yeah, because I just, you know, let's end with this. Target. You see this story?
Yes.
Target is removing certain LGBTQ and Pride Month merchandise from its stores nationwide after an intense backlash from some customers, and some of them violently confronted workers. That they had Target workers attacked by right wingers who did not like the fact that they were selling merchandise that promoted pride or celebrated pride.
I think Target needs to sack up and tell those losers to go to Walmart.
Well, look at the Dodgers backed off of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence and they got backlash for that and they reinvited them and apologized. So I sure hope Target does that because otherwise they're negotiating with terrorists.
They're giving into a loud minority. I mean, most of us, you know, either support it or just don't care. Whatever. Buy your rainbow coffee mug. Great.
Exactly. Or don't. I mean, if you got a problem with it, don't go to the parade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, what, you know.
First, I have a problem with all parades.
I'm running out of places to boycott. I am. I'm running out of places to boycott. Like, I won't go to Home Depot because they're big Trumpers. You know, I burned my MyPillow.
Never had one.
Oh, it was a good pillow. I did. I had.
Yeah, you sponsors. Actually had one.
I had one when I was on radio. They were sponsors. This is before Lindell, you know, showed his true colors.
Right. Did you burn it on social media and like it was a can of Bud Light, or
you should have shot it like it was a can of Bud Light.
Shot it like it was
but at
a
least
can of Bud
Brian
Light.
Didn't pay for his. It cracks me up. These people spend tons of money on Bud Light or whatever they want to boycott. They're giving them the money or M&Ms. Remember, they would buy all the M&Ms and then throw them out.
Well, I did pay for the MyPillow. They didn't give it to me.
Sure.
Oh, but
I did pay for it. And it was, as I recall, it was like $150 or something.
Yeah.
I paid for. And it was a really comfortable pillow and I was really happy with the product. And then, you know, when Dell started running his mouth, it was like, no, I'm not, even though I've already paid for this just in protest, I didn't actually burn it. I threw it in the garbage is what I threw it out, you know, so I threw away $150. But like, I won't go to Home Depot because I'm not giving Home Depot money to give to MAGA. I'm just not doing it.
Right. Me neither. I won't go there either because it's just I always get lost. I just don't. I feel like less of a man in that place. I just don't know my way around.
And on that uplifting note, so where can everybody see everybody? Ron, where are you going to be?
I'll be back in California. Let's see. I'm headlining Punchline on Tuesday, June 13th. I'm also in Cloverdale on June 10th, headlining and Comedy Under the Stars in Elk Grove on June 16th. Find me at RONNVIGH.com.
All right. And Damon?
Yeah, I'm going to likely to be cleared and back at it, physically healthy again in the next week or two. Check out DamonFerguson.com for all my upcoming dates. I'm going to be hitting it hard as soon as I'm physically cleared.
Awesome. And Lauren, you got a new song coming out this week.
Yeah, a new song. Not sure if I'm going to do Target or the debt ceiling. So I thought today's program would help me make my mind up, and it hasn't. So my songs come out on YouTube as Psycho Supermom. I'm on Facebook. I have a one-woman show based on my Jewish mother comedy album. I'm starting some house concerts, and all that stuff will be on my website, laurenmayer.com.
All right. Well, I want to thank you, Ron Vai, Damon Ferguson, Lauren Mayer. Always a pleasure.
Thanks. Thank you.
And that was going to do it for us for this week. We'll see whether or not we still have an economy next week. So make sure that you tune in and you check us out there. If you want to support this podcast, there are a number of ways you can do it. The easiest way is by telling everybody you know any way that you can possibly tell them, send them the link. You can subscribe, and in which case the link will automatically show up in your feed every week. You don't have to remember to come look for us because we will find you. Another way that you can help is by giving us a 5-star review on whichever platform you're using to listen to this show on. That really does help, because when people are looking for new podcasts, they look to see what's highly rated. And if you've got high ratings, they'll check you out and see what you're about. And we're trying to get folks to check us out. So be sure to check us out and check us out next week. Till next time, be kind to your neighbor. He knows where you live.